You are Locked On Vikings, your daily Minnesota Vikings podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Vikings. I am your host, your pal, and the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun. You can find me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. Today's episode of Locked On Vikings is brought to you by Pepsi. Thanks to a lack of natural athleticism or commitment or maybe overbearing sports parents, fewer than 1% of 1% of 1% of people will ever play professional football. But instead of entering the NFL, they've joined another league, the League of Football Watchers. This football season is going to be different, and Pepsi is here to get you ready for game day, no matter how you watch. Personally, and I think this is true of a lot of us, our watching experience has gotten a little bit different now that the Vikings are in the gutter. But hey, now at least they're off of their bye week. And no matter how you watch, Pepsi is the refreshment you need to power through any game day. Because Pepsi isn't made for those who play the game, it's made for those who watch it. Pepsi, made for football watching. And today I've got a couple of like film insights. It's the bye week, so usually Wednesday would be the day that I would like go over this past Sunday's game. There wasn't a game, so instead I've got a couple of general things that I wanted to talk about, Anthony Barr, and some things that you can do on the field right now for free to help kind of cope with the Kirk Cousins experience. The Vikings seem pretty committed to it, and so we can kind of talk about like how to put up with life with Kirk Cousins and maybe be a little bit smarter about it and generate more wins, try to get more of the 2019 team and less of the 2020 team. But first, there's a couple of little news items we have to go over. On Tuesday, a rumor made the rounds on social media, at least, that the Browns were trying to offer a couple of draft picks to the Vikings for Adam Thielen. I looked into this rumor, and I am 99% sure this is a bit. I think that a lot of people circulated it because it looked really legit. The tweet looked very legit, and the account has a lot of followers, but that account has a lot of kind of shotgun, mud at the wall things that it always says per sources. This guy's getting traded and that guy's getting traded. It almost never bears out. And he even says like he has a per source t-shirt that he sells. So my guess is that's nothing. I mean, listen, they're probably fielding calls on everything from everybody that kind of made that known to the world. So I'm sure that there are calls and conversations going on. But if anything more real happens, we'll see it from a more reliable and credible source. You can kind of safely wait to see it from somebody you trust rather than kind of running with the first guy that decides to throw out whatever he wants on Twitter. In actual trade news, Everson Griffin is going to the Lions. Dallas was not very happy with his performance in the first few games of this season. He was only really being a rotational player. He, like production-wise, landed somewhere between like Jalen Holmes and DJ Wonnum. So the Cowboys were paying like $6 million for that. You know, the Vikings were very in on him and probably would have loved to have Everson Griffin on that price tag, but they lost the bidding war. And it seems to have worked out not in the Cowboys' favor. So they offloaded him for a sixth round pick to the Lions. And because of COVID-19 protocols, because we're too late in the week now, too close to the game, it's going to take too long to get him through the testing and all that stuff. So he's actually not going to play this week. He's going to play next week when the Lions play the Vikings. So his debut is going to be a revenge game against the Vikings. I don't think there's too much bad blood between the Vikings and Everson Griffin. I think the Vikings lowballed him. Maybe that's a little bit offensive, but I think Griffin like understands, you know, the business side of it at all and all of that. And I know that like, again, he was very willing to come back down the stretch, and he just took the higher offer, which, you know, who among us wouldn't? But then we get to see, as far as I understand, you know, the Cowboys fronts and the Lions fronts aren't particularly different. They both run like kind of classic 4-3 setups a lot of the time. The Lions don't do a lot of like blitzing, but he was only a rotational guy for the Cowboys. So we'll see what his role is in Detroit and if he ends up having more of an impact there than he did in Dallas. In response to yesterday's news about the Vikings taking Pat Elflein off of IR and reactivating him, the Vikings have terminated Brett Jones's contract. So he will likely go back to the practice squad unless somebody claims him on waivers or something. That seems to be about what you would expect with Pat Elflein coming back because Brett Jones only joined the active roster. He didn't make the initial team. He only joined the active roster when Pat Elflein went down. So now that Elflein is back, everything is kind of get shifted out and he's on the outside looking in again. But it's also a little bit informative about the way that the Vikings view Brett Jones. There's been a lot of calls for Brett Jones to come in and like replace a struggling guard, be it Drew Samia or Dakota Dozier, or go back to like even the Tom Compton days or Elflein himself. And the Vikings have kind of declined to do that. And part of it is that he has a run blocking issue that makes it pretty difficult for him to get on the field. But the other part of it is that it seems like the Vikings view him as a backup center and only a backup center. So it also sheds a little bit of light on what the Vikings would do if, say, Garrett Bradbury got hurt. If Bradbury got hurt, it seems like they would put Pat Elflein at center over Brett Jones and, you know, fill in the guard position like the way that they have already. So it seems like that's their plan going into this, because now that they have a backup center, you don't need a third string center on your depth chart, especially if you can get that backup center role filled by somebody who's already filling another role on your roster. It can help you make room for other guys on the roster that, you know, you want to stash or have extra depth or extra special team stuff or whatever, the Dan Chisina kind of luxury roster adds, if you will. So that's it for the news of the day. A few odds and ends. They also did some like practice squad shuffling and stuff. You don't need to worry about that too much. I will let you know if anybody actually gets on the active roster. But now there are a couple of things that I want to weigh in on. You know, we've talked a lot about Kirk Cousins and his contract and getting rid of him and trading him. But the way that like Zimmer and Spielman talk about it and the way that that contract is constructed, it seems pretty clear that they are not planning to move on. So we can talk a little bit about, you know, what do we do with that? But before we even get into that, I'm going to talk to you a little bit about Anthony Barr. Now, Anthony Barr is missing right now. He's off the team. And I think the Vikings are missing him in a way that is difficult to measure, that you wouldn't really find with like any kind of production stat, even like good production stats, you know, like run stop rate or stuff like that. Things that I typically really like, you're not really going to see, or like, you know, pressures or pass rush win rate or whatever. You're not really going to see that with Anthony Barr because of the way the Vikings deploy him is not necessarily conducive to like just asking him to beat a guy every time. It's a little bit more like a part of a strategy, and I want to explain that to you. So we're going to talk about all of that stuff. Now, listen, Kirk Cousins comes with his peaks and valleys, but you don't want to deal with that kind of inconsistency when it comes to your car. Why would you choose to spend 30%, 50%, 100% more for the exact same auto parts at a chain store, like a new car dealership or something like that, when you could go to Rock Auto? For example, if you have a Honda Odyssey from like 2005, 2010, super common car, and you need a new fuel pump for it, you can get one for like $354 at a big chain store like Advance Auto Parts, and at rockauto.com, the same exact parts, same make, everything for $216.79. The secret is that those chain stores have different price tiers for professional mechanics and do-it-yourselfers, you know, random people that come into the store. rockauto.com's prices are the same for everybody and they are reliably low. So if you want to get in on that and get something for your car or truck for a nice discount, you can go to rockauto.com. And when you check out, let them know in the How You Heard About Us section that Locked On sent you. Because if you don't, I'm going to have to lock myself in a room for 36 hours with just my thoughts. And I'll have to bet my mortgage that I can make it through the whole thing without crying. Rock Auto. Reliably low prices. Amazing selection. All the parts your car will ever need. So the first thing I want to talk about, if you follow me on Twitter, you probably saw a quick little explainer with video. And if you like visual aids, I'll link that in the show notes. I recommend you go check that out instead. But Mike Zimmer, when asked about Anthony Barr, has kind of explained him as having like this gravity where he sort of, you know, sucks protections toward him, and that Mike Zimmer can use that to design blitzes. And so I kind of want to explain what that effect is and why the Vikings are missing it so much. So in that thread, I kind of showed an example of why Anthony Barr is such a disruptive pass rusher. He's been one of the more elite pass rushers over time. It's been up and down, right? He wasn't like a great pass rusher or anything in 2019, but a lot of that comes down to usage. And the thing is, if you block him with a running back, you are screwed. You cannot block Anthony Barr with a running back. That's a really, really difficult thing to do. And his success rate against that is really, really high. You might remember a game a couple years ago against the Dolphins where Adam Gase kind of famously did not game plan for Anthony Barr, and they blew out the Dolphins. They got like 10 sacks, and Mike Zimmer was asked like, hey, so what happened in this game? Well, how'd you get 10 sacks? And he was like, they didn't plan for Barr. This is baffling. I definitely thought they were going to do that. That's completely insane. Huge indictment of Adam Gase, by the way. But if you watch that game, if you watch Anthony Barr pass rushing in that game, they treat him like you would normally treat a linebacker in those situations, where you just kind of say, okay, linebacker's coming. I've got the running back on him. We need our running backs to be able to block linebackers. It's a very Adam Gase-y, like kind of machismo Debo deal where it's like, well, you know, you're a running back. Your job is to block the linebacker. You have to be able to block the linebacker. And if you don't, it's not my fault for the scheme. It's because you weren't capable enough. And I think that's kind of the attitude that he seems to have toward these kinds of things. And it worked out horribly. They got their butts kicked. So usually teams will put offensive linemen on Anthony Barr where they can. Sometimes you design a blitz where Anthony Barr's like coming off the edge and, you know, there's another guy coming off the edge and you know, they can't like have a guard go all the way out there or anything like that. But, you know, when it makes sense to, they'll put an offensive lineman on Anthony Barr, and Anthony Barr usually won't beat that. You know, an offensive lineman's going to have 40, 50, 60 pounds on Anthony Barr. And as good of a player as Anthony Barr is, he's not going to beat an offensive lineman. That's still like a mismatch. He's still a linebacker, which is why I'm always like kind of hesitant with when the people who are asking for him to like go to defensive end or anything. I don't think they should do that. The Jets almost did it. I don't think the Jets should have done it, but I digress. The point is, if you put an offensive lineman on a linebacker, and if you have to, if you don't have a choice but to put an offensive lineman on a linebacker, you can kind of use that to your advantage. But to get into that, we kind of have to talk about how blitzes are designed in the first place, because you might think of a blitz as, well, you're just sending an extra person to pass rush, and you know they're going to have to just try to get to the quarterback and get past whoever. And you might think of it as a little bit of more of like a jailbreak, which sometimes it is. A lot of times the blitz package has a little bit more nuance to it. For one, the way that Mike Zimmer designs his pass rushes, there is a great video from Brett Coleman that like explains how he designs like pass rush lanes, and it's a lot more spatial than you would think. It's not just a numbers game. It's not one for one. Okay, we have four guys, they have five guys, hopefully somebody wins. It's not, you know, oh, they have five blockers in, I'm gonna send six people and hope that, you know, that gets home to the quarterback. There is some, like, that's like the baseline risk, but the way that they're designed is a lot smarter than that, especially when it comes up against mobile quarterbacks, which the Vikings have improved against mobile quarterbacks quite a bit since, you know, the catastrophes of like 2015 and 2016 with guys like Russell Wilson, you know, running all over them, and, you know, Josh Allen like hurdling Anthony Barr and stuff. But they've gotten a lot better about this in recent years, and a huge part of it is the way that they set up their pass rushing lanes, which is very spatial. You know, you will have an edge rusher, say, you know, you ask Danielle Hunter, you ask Ifeanyi Odenigbo, not necessarily pin your ears back, get behind the guy and win. If you can, that's great, but more just rush upfield so that he can't bail out of the pocket to this direction. And then you tell the three technique, okay, rush upfield to this spot so that he can't bail out of the pocket to this direction. And then you tell Danielle Hunter, now you go beat your guy, penetrate and get in. And if you get into the pocket, we've set up all the other pass rushes to kind of attack to a spot that will make sure the quarterback has nowhere to go. And then that's how you can kind of ensure that a pressure turns into a sack and not like a scramble monster catastrophe. Now, if you don't have defensive tackles that can get a big push, like somebody like a Linval Joseph, you know, and you don't have like dynamic edge rushers that can kind of control the offensive linemen the way that the offensive linemen want to control you, some of that stuff falls apart. You need horses to do, I mean, you need horses to run anything, right? But the way that they design blitzes is going to be kind of along a similar vein. But if you think about it, you can kind of divide protection schemes into chunks, right? It's not six on six. It's three on three on one side and three on three on the other side, right? So say you have like a two on two, you can do like twists or stunts, or you can do kind of different tricks that help to ensure that you get a better pass rush angle. You know, you will have, you know, say you have a two on two, the guy on the left goes and attacks the guy on the right, and the guy on the right will try to kind of loop around. That's a pretty classic twist. And the offensive lineman responsible for the guy on the left is probably going to follow him because he's, you know, oh, he's my job to block him. And the guy on the that was responsible for the guy on the right just got his shoulder blown up by a different player. And so hopefully that creates space that you can get like a free ride into the pocket. That's like a classic trick that every defensive line coach uses. But the way that the Vikings would kind of manipulate this further was to kind of ensure and use the predictability of, okay, they are going to put a linebacker on Anthony Barr. That gives us information about their protections. Because as an offensive lineman, the way that you handle blitzes, you know, you kind of have to configure, okay, well, I used to have this guy, but now that there's a guy coming, now I have to switch over and have this guy. And the guy next to me has to have the guy I used to have and all that. And so you have to kind of all be able to configure that. And if you know that their rules for configuring that include, oh, 55's coming, I'm an offensive line, I cannot leave that to the running back, I'm going to do it, then you can sort of use that to make mismatches elsewhere. For example, if you can get them to commit to putting an offensive lineman on Anthony Barr, you might be able to slide their protection to one side. Let's say they have a tight end on the field. You might be able to entice them to slide their protection in such a way that a defensive end ends up on a tight end one-on-one, and then you can have that defensive end have a really good opportunity to get a sack there. And if you add extra blitzers into that, then it becomes a really easy way of getting free rushers. Think about how many times you've seen Harrison Smith or Eric Wilson or Eric Kendricks or Mackenzie Alexander or, you know, even Jeff Gladney got a sack through this. How many times have you seen like a non-standard pass rusher get a completely unblocked sack? A lot of that has to do with Anthony Barr and Mike Zimmer being a good enough game planner and a good enough blitz designer where he can kind of take advantage of what Anthony Barr affords you. And the other thing is he can drop into coverage easily enough that you don't need to send extra players for a blitz to have a better chance of getting home. You can just design it smarter, and then that blitz will like get the pressure it's supposed to get. But you only have to line Anthony Barr up on the line of scrimmage. You don't even have to rush extra. Sometimes you can rush just four and do what's called a sim pressure, where you make it look like it's going to be a blitz, and then they back off into coverage. And you can rush with only four without sacrificing any coverage, but still have the effects of a blitz because he warps the protection scheme. That's the advantage that you get with Anthony Barr. Without Anthony Barr, now they have to blitz like a normal team. And normal teams that don't have Anthony Barr-type linebackers just have to kind of send more players. And when you send more players, that has a ripple effect through the coverage. So there was another one in the thread that I linked in the show notes. It was a play against Ryan Tannehill where they had to ensure that this would be pressure, they had to send not only Eric Kendricks, but they also had to send the slot corner Jeff Gladney. There was a slot receiver that Jeff Gladney is then abandoning, and the safety has to come over and take him. But because you don't want to telegraph your hand, the safety can't start that close to the slot receiver, and the slot receiver had an outbreaking route. So Anthony Harris was just chasing it, and he never had a chance. That's the kind of thing that you risk when you have to send more players on a blitz. So the Vikings can still blitz, but their blitzes are riskier, and they don't get home as often, and they can't be nearly as smart about it because they don't have that advantage that Anthony Barr generates. So the Vikings really miss Anthony Barr right now. And hopefully, you know, if you can get Anthony Barr back next year at 100% and all that, hopefully, you know, the blitz packages and the unblocked sacks from safeties and stuff can come back into the fold. Speaking of things that have come back into the fold, there's Built Bar. Built Bar is the protein bar that tastes like a candy bar. It is low in sugar, it is low calorie, it's high protein, high fiber, it's great for a keto diet, and it's covered in 100% chocolate. It has all your favorite original flavors like German chocolate, peanut butter, raspberry, banana bread's a sneaky good one, but it has six new flavors now in this new little iteration of Built Bar, like cookies and cream and carrot cake, things that you just don't ever think that you would be able to snack on if you're trying to lose or maintain weight. Like, here's an example. The coconut almond one, I'm not a big coconut guy, but if you're a coconut guy, it has 18 grams of protein, 180 calories, 5 grams of sugar, and 5 grams of net carbs. So if you're interested in that and you want to get in on Built Bar, you can go to builtbar.com and use promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off of your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON for 20% off at builtbar.com. So finally today, I want to talk to you about the life with Kirk Cousins. We're going to settle in here. We had a little bit of fun this bye week kind of talking about, well, what if you traded him and what about how would the cap work and could you release him and all that, you know, with the mailbag and all that stuff too. But here's the unpleasant truth, I guess. If you hate Kirk Cousins, he ain't going anywhere. The Vikings are sticking by him. Rick Spielman said so in an interview. He said that, you know, nobody's lost faith in Kirk Cousins. He had that quote. And I kind of believe him. And I think that here's the thing. He understands that Kirk Cousins is streaky and inconsistent and not necessarily this bad every game. He's been really bad for a whole huge streak. And right now, you know, you can be as mad as you want about the contract and, you know, being married to Cousins and stuff like that. But the Vikings' take on it, I guess, is Cousins turns the corner any minute now. And when he turns the corner, they are set up to maximize the highs of Kirk Cousins, to have the Kirktober of 2019. That's something that the Vikings kind of leaned into and enabled while kind of saying, well, if Kirk Cousins plays poorly, we're going to lose. So we're just going to lose and it's going to be ugly. And I think the contract of Kirk Cousins is like built to do that. Like a little bit. Now, here's the deal. I think they gave him a fully guaranteed contract as a bargaining chip, right? That's part of what helps you in the negotiation. And if you can give him a fully guaranteed contract, you can probably get the cap number down a little bit, right? He's probably going to take, you know, fully guaranteed $66 million over unguaranteed $86 million. And if you know you're going to want him for those 2 years and you're willing to like put in and commit, then of course you're going to take the 66 and not worry about the fact that it's fully guaranteed. But the other thing about that, like, obviously there's a problem with that, right? Is that you're committing so hard to Kirk Cousins and you have no way out during the bad times. But I think part of that is to disincentivize the bad, like getting rid of him in the bad times. You don't want to sell low on a guy like Kirk Cousins, who could then go to, you know, if you say did trade him to Dallas or Indianapolis or any of these other teams that we're talking about maybe trading Kirk Cousins to. And if you did, and then he turns it around, you're going to feel like an idiot that you just got rid of a quarterback. And now you've got like Sean Mannion or like half a quarterback in Jake Browning starting. And, you know, somebody else is doing, you know, Kirk Cousins is doing well over there. And you're going to go, oh no, why did we trade him for, you know, pennies on the dollar? Because we traded him after the worst stretch of his career. So nobody wanted him, and, you know, we had to give away a draft pick, and now, you know, he's turned it around and he's doing better elsewhere, because that's just what he does, no matter what's going on. Sometimes he'll play well, sometimes he'll play poorly, and he's just, like, too inconsistent. Long-term, I do still want to have a way out, right? I want to have a rookie kind of on the books. I want to have, like, a Jordan Love situation. I want to have, you know, like, a Jacob Eason situation in Indianapolis, or a Patrick Mahomes situation in Kansas City, to go for the absolute ceiling of that method. Somebody that you can maybe turn to when things are going poorly and kind of have an extra idea. And then, of course, you know, an idea of, hey, if this kid develops, now he's going to take us long term, and we don't have to have, you know, this weird variance roller coaster that we're totally stapled to anymore. But if you are going to staple yourself to Cousins, I think there are some things you can do to make the bad times a little bit easier. And I think that's a more productive thing to talk about, because the Vikings aren't going to move on from Kirk Cousins. I'm going to say that again, because I think it's a truth that we gotta really buy into. The Vikings aren't going to move on from Kirk Cousins. I would love to see something where they, you know, have a trade for some other quarterback or something. I would love to see them trade and then, like, go get Dak Prescott, or, you know, go trade the quarterback and tank away. Go get Trevor. I would love that. Would be really fun. It's not going to happen. So instead, let's talk about kind of how to live on Kirk Cousins Island, because we're stranded here for a while. And I think the first thing that you've got to do is get a better backup. And I've talked about Sean Mannion a lot. So if you're unfamiliar with Sean Mannion, why the Vikings seem to be so enamored with Sean Mannion, it's because they're under the impression that he makes Kirk Cousins better. I'm sure they're right about that, right? Where the way that, you know, in every NFL team, the backup quarterback has a lot of prep duties, and the backup quarterback job a lot of times is like being a second quarterback's coach. And those duties, the things that you actually are doing week in and week out, Sean Mannion's very good at. To talk about it like Madden ratings, if Sean Mannion at backup turns Kirk Cousins from an 83 to an 85, and they probably think that's worth it. The problem is you don't have an insurance policy, right? If Kirk Cousins is bad, if he goes down, Sean Mannion is not going to lead you to the promised land. And so you kind of are giving up on the insurance policy in order to kind of maximize the good times with Kirk Cousins. And you don't really have a situation where you can bench him or you can get rid of him, because you don't have another option to go to. And again, that might be a little bit by design. The Vikings kind of want to force themselves to weather out the bad times and be patient through them, with the understanding that, like always with Kirk Cousins, good times are around the corner. By the way, I wrote this in article form at Zone Coverage, so I'll link it in the show notes when it publishes. One of the other things that you can do, so you could go get a backup, right? And there's going to be a lot of backups on the market soon. I mean, obviously, if Drew Brees doesn't retire, the Saints are probably going to want to trade away somebody like Jameis Winston. That's an interesting backup, although if you're looking for like a steady Eddie to like come in and, you know, oh man, Kirk Cousins is having the worst game of his life, we got to pull him and just limp through to the end of this one. Jameis Winston is not the guy that like mitigates that problem. There are guys like, you know, I would love to get like a Chase Daniel, right? The Lions just got him for 3 years as a backup. That's like my favorite backup out there right now. But there are other players, you know, like Joe Flacco that have a style, guys like Jacoby Brissett. I think Tyrod Taylor is the perfect backup, and he's only on a one-year deal with the Chargers, or he's at the end of his deal with the Chargers. Tyrod Taylor is a very conservative quarterback to a fault, and it's kind of what precludes him from being a starter. But as a backup, that's exactly what you want. Go be safe, game manage, get us through to the end of this game. And, you know, if you are in a terrible Kirk Cousins game that you're kind of in, and the only way you lose it is if he blows this, and you just need someone to dink and dunk their way down the field, you might be able to pull him, put in Tyrod Taylor. And so when he's having a 3.5 interceptions total meltdown like he is against Atlanta, you don't just have to commit to like losing that game. The other things you can do are a little bit more schematic. For example, you can lean on the reads that Kirk Cousins is good at. And this is a little bit like, so when you have like a rookie quarterback, you give him some easy reads, some easy completions, run a quick spot concept, run a quick drive concept, things that, you know, college quarterbacks are going to be able to handle with easy throws that don't require huge reads or, you know, huge like look off a safety and throw a big deep post or anything like that. No, just give him a 5-yard quick stick route and get a little bit of rhythm under him. And I think you can approach Kirk Cousins in a similar way. I don't think you have to baby him as much as you baby a rookie, and he can handle handle more complex, very good concepts very, very well, but just make sure you're leaning on the ones that he happens to be best at. For example, he's very good at throwing the deep post on a rollout, so lean on that, and the Vikings do lean on it. He's very good at triangle reads, for example, and that's something that's like one of the things that you don't really get rookies that are like good at it, but a triangle read is a cover three beater usually, but it beats zone defenses, and the idea is usually you have a read in the middle, where you'll have somebody just kind of run like a curl to the middle, be it like a running back or a tight end kind of running like a slant curl type thing. And if a linebacker converges on that middle thing, then you know that that linebacker is not going to screw you up to the outside. And then on the outside, you have a high-low read. So you'll have a guy running a deep route and a guy running a shallow route. This can come in a whole bunch of different ways. It could be, you know, curl flat. It could be like a pull concept with a go and a curl, something like any high-low over there. And you read the cornerback. If the cornerback goes deep, like it's a zone route with the deep route, then you throw to the shallow route. And if the cornerback comes up on the shallow route, like it's man coverage, then the deep route is probably going to be open or worth taking a shot on. That is a read that Kirk Cousins is very good at. He gets through it very quickly, and it beats cover three, which is the most common defense you see in the NFL. The Vikings do use this a ton, and I think you can kind of advocate using it more, especially earlier in the game, and then once Cousins is in that rhythm, you can move away from it and hope that he leans on some of the improvisational stuff that he's been working so hard on that actually has paid off. You know, it's kind of been overshadowed by all the interceptions, but he has had like a lot of, you know, escape the pocket, go find a guy downfield, convert a third down, Aaron Rodgers-y plays that he used to be completely incapable of. And if you can get him in the rhythm and kind of unlock that stuff, then you can use it later in the game. Another thing you could possibly do is favor checkdowns over extra protection. And this is, I think, a philosophical debate, right? Your offensive line is playing poorly. Do you put extra guys in protection so you can get more double teams? Or do you just have a checkdown and say, okay, if they pressure us, I'm just going to dump it off to Dalvin Cook? Right now, the Vikings are kind of favoring extra protection, right? You'll put eight people in protection, run a three route concept and hope that eight people is enough. But if one guy screws up, the extra tight, like if the guard screws up, the extra tight end's not going to fit to save you there. And because you only have three routes, you won't have a checkdown. So Kirk Cousins's only option is to either scramble and try to do something improvisational. Sometimes that turns into performance art weirdness, or he could just crumple and take the sack. This is like what happened on the safety that Jair Alexander got in week one, right? He just didn't have a checkdown because there were protection responsibilities for both tight ends on that play. They came out in 12 personnel. Both tight ends were blocking and Dalvin Cook was blocking. So all they had was like two routes. And if you had a tight end maybe leaking out, especially because that was, you know, you're on your like own 2 yard line or whatever. And so if you have a tight end leaking out and, you know, there was a blown protection assignment, what happened on that play was Dalvin Cook blew his assignment and there was a free rusher. When that happens, he can dump it off and live to fight another day rather than kind of going all in and hoping that it's enough. And I think that's the philosophical difference that I want to see from the Vikings right now. Right now, they're going all in on Kirk Cousins and hoping that that's enough rather than saying, well, maybe let's hedge our bet a little bit. And instead of going all in on a plan A and hoping that that plan A wins, let's go 95% in on a plan A and just divert a few resources over to plan B so that when plan A does fall apart, which it is wont to do, we aren't completely screwed and incapable of producing like NFL level football. That is what I'm asking of the Vikings here. And I don't think that that's a very big change. I think that's just a tweak to frequency of play selection that they can make for free without worrying about the salary cap or anything like that. So that is, I think, the best living with Kirk Cousins advice that I would want to give to the Vikings. Tomorrow on the show is going to be Crossover Thursday. We're going to get right back into this thing. So the bye week is finally over. We're back to previewing actual Vikings football. So we're going to have Peter Bukowski on. We're going to talk a little bit about the Packers and their thriving world while we sit here in despair. It's going to be very fun, and I'm going to lash out at him because I'm upset. In the meantime, you can find me on Twitter at Luke Braun NFL. You can find the show on Twitter at Locked On Vikings. This show, of course, is brought to you by Pepsi, made for football watchers, and Locked On Vikings is part of the Locked On Podcast Network. I will see you all tomorrow, and as always, Skol.